One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
It's the eldest daughter in me. It's like growing up being the kid that your parents were always like, I'm not worried about you. Like even when I came to my parents, like stressed out, sobbing, really hung up about something, they would always like sit and listen. And then my dad specifically was always like, you'll be fine. I know you. I'm not worried about you. And sometimes there were times in my childhood where I was like, can you be worried about me though? Like, can you be worried? Like, I get it. I know I'll be fine. I'm like very self-sufficient. I will figure it out. I will take care of it. Yes. But like, can you worry? Can you be worried about me for a second?
Dude, where are you? Pick up your phone. I'm going to a song party tonight and you're obviously invited. So call me back.
Okay. I love you.
What's up, you guys, and welcome back to Emotionally Online, the weekly slumber party for spilling guts and sharing secrets, hosted by yours truly, the one and only Maddie Drosbeck, who's feeling embarrassed this week. Embarrassed and like I need to punish myself because I discovered something about myself this week that is quite distressing to me. I was going through my screen time in my phone, as one does, just checking in on myself because I feel like I've been not doing great this past week, specifically with amount of time I'm not on my phone or like putting my phone down to like laser focus. And so I was laying in bed one night this week, like, tomorrow I'm gonna leave my phone in this room so I can really like head down, edit my most recent video. And so as I was planning on doing that and like, you know, thinking all about what I was going to do the following day inside my head, I was like, let me look at my screen time app to see like what actually has it been this week that's made it so hard for me to focus. Because usually I'm pretty good about setting these boundaries with my phone. Like, what is going on? And so then I went to look at my screen time for various apps over the course of the last week of my life. And to my complete and utter shock, one of the apps that I had spent the most amount of time on that week was none other than 2048. That godforsaken math game. What is wrong with me? What is fucking wrong with me as a math hater that I'm spending 8 hours of my week? Over the course of a week, I spent 8 hours playing 2048 on my phone. What fucking year is it? 2013? Oh my God. The gasp that I let out when I saw that. I was like, what is wrong with you? What is wrong with you? I stood up out of my bed and I was like, get it together. I was like, I need to shake you for a second. What is wrong? What's going on up here? Something isn't right this week. What happened to you? You went through something and you're repressing it because what the fuck is going on that you have to spend 8 hours of your week playing 2048? What are you avoiding? I was literally looking at myself in the mirror like, what is it? What are you avoiding? Be honest with yourself right now because you do not need to be playing 2048 for 8 hours. Oh my God, I was so mad. I'm so mad. I'm still so mad. Ask me if I deleted the game off my phone. I didn't. I haven't even deleted it yet. I don't even like the fucking game like that. I don't know why I'm playing it so much. But it's just where we are. When I was coming home from Thanksgiving, we were on the way to the airport and my sister was like, ugh, time to download 2048 for this flight. And I was like, she's so real for that. Like, let me download 2048. And it's been the worst decision ever. So really, I blame Morgan. Because if it wasn't for her reminding me that 2048 existed, I would be living in peace. I would have left 2048 in high school as far as I'm concerned. But no, here we are in the year 2024, racking up 8 fucking hours of 2048 screen time in the span of 1 week. That's disgusting. That's disgusting. 8 hours of math. That's so fucked up. I cannot believe myself. Shocking. Completely and utterly shocking. Earth-shattering in many ways. And actually, that was probably not the most shocking revelation of the week last week. Last week, as you might remember, I talked about my disdain for the song Apata. I hate it. It actually, saying it out loud makes me so mad. It's not even funny, but I didn't realize that was going to be a hot take. It was actually shocking to me to discover that it was a hot take. And it's not that I feel that it was like an overwhelming amount of support for the song, but it was like more of an even split than I thought it was going to be. Even opening up the comments on the Spotify version of the show, people were not in favor of me. They did not agree with my take. And then the poll over on Spotify, because I did run a poll on Spotify last week where the question was, do you like the song Apata? 34% said they loved it, 38% said they hated it, and 27% said they never heard it. And those people really are experiencing a freedom that I wish that I had. Because I just can't do it. And I was shocked to learn that the people were so divided on this. And some people passionately love that song. Here's what I'll say. I have two things to say. Number one is that the specific part of the song that I hate is the apata part. That is diabolically bad to me. And also, I thought it was really funny how somebody messaged me and they were like, it means apartment. Like, that's what it means. I'm like, no, I knew. I knew that that meant apartment. I just hate it. Like, I just don't like it. I think it's a bad song. It sounds bad to me. I'm so sorry. I know I'm doubling down right now. And I'm sorry. I'm sorry that we don't have the same taste in this particular song. The second thing was that I guess there's a lot of lore to this particular artist and like their journey to where they are now. I know nothing about them. I know nothing about their history. This is the first time I maybe have ever heard any music that they're featured on. Obviously, I know Bruno Mars. But Rosé, I've never heard of. Do not know. Consider me stupid. I know nothing. So when I realized that I had such a hot take about a K-pop star, I was like, that was bold. That was bold and that was really brave of you. And I didn't realize how brave I was being. Because to be honest, I might have withheld my spicy opinion had I known that I was coming for someone with a very passionate fan base. The same way I won't say a word about Taylor Swift. Locked up. Okay? My mouth is shut. And it's not that I'm a hater. It's not that I'm a hater of any of these people, right? I don't like this song. I am a hater for this song. 100%. I hate the song. I think it's bad. But I'm not a hater of the entity of this person. They might have other music that I could love. But I do hate this song. I do. I hate it. I think it's bad. But I might like their other songs. This is all entirely possible. And, you know, there's some Taylor Swift songs that I like. Not for me, though. Not my cup of tea. But I love that it's a lot of other people's. I love it and I respect it. And I'm so happy for you. But sometimes I get a little scared. I'm like, oh, I'm a little scared to say that I didn't like this song or I didn't like this album. And sometimes people are like, why is there no Taylor Swift on Lover Girls Worldwide playlist? And I just pretend that I'm blind. I'm like, sorry, I actually can't read. I actually have never learned how to read, so I don't know how to read what you just said to me. Because I'm so scared. I'm so scared of you guys. I love your passion. I do. I love your passion. And also, I'm scared of you. And also, many of my friends are Swifties. And I love it. And I love it for you so much. But it's not me. It's just not my journey. But I do love that for you guys. And I love how passionate and strong-willed and feisty you are. Really, I do. That's not even me joking. I do love it. But the same way I will never express any of my true opinions about a Taylor Swift song because I'm afraid of you, I probably wouldn't have expressed my true opinions about this song if I knew that I was coming for such a strong fan base. Not even that I came for. It wasn't like that, you guys. God. Oh, I have foot and mouth disease right now or whatever the fuck. All right. Now that I've sufficiently talked myself into a hole, I did want to talk about last week's podcast episode because there were some awesome responses in the comment section as it connects to the conversation that we had about queerness and seeking this like protection within relationships. I was talking specifically about how body insecurities of mine have been brought up in different ways when seeking out a certain feeling in relationships, learning that I seek out feeling protected in a partnership, that I really want to feel like feminine and cutesy. And I think when I date men, a lot of them make me feel that way sort of by default, number one, because I think a lot of men are sort of conditioned to take on that role in relationships with women. And number two, most men are bigger than me. Even if I am a bigger clothing size than them, most everyone is taller than me because I'm 5'3". So I feel like it's something that has a very physical nature to it, though it is something more emotional. But there's been like, I don't know, this weird thing inside my head of like me watching myself having crushes on women and wondering what they must be thinking of me, or I don't know, like what role I'm expected to fulfill as a plus size woman, dating women, being interested in women that are not all that different to me size wise. Like, yes, a lot of women might be taller than me, but there's also a lot of short women. So when I hang out with other women, if I'm having a crush on another woman, it's more likely that she might be the same height as me versus when I date men, it's unlikely. Less likely, rather, that he would be the same height as me. So anyways, I talked more about it in last week's episode, and it is a very like complicated topic that I don't feel like I have the best grasp on explaining. And I feel like it's one of those things where like if you have felt it, then you get it. But if you have no idea what I'm talking about, I'm sure what I'm saying is probably confusing. But as always, I was very, you know, pleasantly greeted with a bunch of people in the comments, totally understanding how it was that I was feeling. And I wanted to read some of the comments you guys left in response because they were super thoughtful and brought up some new thoughts for me in response to all of this. This person says, "Hey Maddie, I wanted to respond to your question about feeling small and girlish within queer relationships. I too have always felt like I want to be protected within a relationship, and I have the experience of dating a girl that's smaller than me. I'm 5'4 and plus size, and my girlfriend is 5'3 and very petite. I always feel protected by her though, which is something I thought I'd never be able to experience because of being plus size. But I feel like the love and protection she has for me completely transcends our physical beings, if that makes any sense. It definitely was a hurdle I had to jump because it was something I was very insecure about when we met. But I think being body neutral helps a lot with those insecurities." And in response, I said, "That totally makes sense. I think I need to do some reflection on what feeling protected by a partner really means to me in action. I don't know if I've ever really thought about the specific actions or things a partner does that make me feel protected beyond just knowing that's something I like to feel. And I think since I've mostly dated men in the past, and that's a role that men are conditioned to take automatically within romantic partnerships, I haven't really had to think a lot about the individual actions that really make me feel protected. I think my brain associates it with physical size because of my own relationship with my body and my history with it, but in practice, I agree that it really comes from someplace else. Something about being the eldest daughter and also being plus size that makes me want to feel protected and taken care of by someone else in a very bold and certain way." So reading this comment, it like brought up two sort of pieces of reflection for me. Number one was at the end when, you know, they're saying that for them and their relationship, like the partner that is smaller has provided them with so much protection and love and safety that sort of like the fears that they had about their size sort of melted away because of how this person just sort of busts through all of that. And I have a feeling that this question or insecurity of mine and how it's bubbling up has largely to do with like my own history with my body. I do feel like I'm in a good place with my body, but these are lifelong sort of thoughts that are going to pop up in new ways, and I'm going to have to, you know, realize it and point it out and dig into it and whatever. So though I feel like I'm in a good place with my body, I do think that I'll have moments like this forever. But to me, the reason why this is popping up is like, one part because of my history with my body, and part two because of like these heteronormative expectations that I'm putting on a relationship and like what roles I'm supposed to fulfill in a queer relationship, and if it's the same as the ones that I might end up fulfilling in a heterosexual relationship. I don't know. I just think that I am probably conditioned to approach relationship dynamics in one way because I've historically dated mostly men, and I'm, you know, now starting to reckon with how queer relationships can and will look different for me or feel different for me. But when you're saying what you're saying about how your partner is smaller than you, but they've made you feel so like safe and loved and protected, in my head, I was like, well, that makes a lot of sense to me because I feel like that's probably what I have provided to the men that I have dated that are bigger than me. Like, I have eldest daughter syndrome to the highest degree. I feel like I am very much someone who like wants to shower people in care and love and support and affection. And I am like, I mean, I said in last week's episode that I find myself being like a carer, and at my worst, I can be a fixer, you know? But anyways, I just say that because obviously I know that you can be cutesy and feminine and protected by someone else while offering that same protection, because I have been in dynamics where I have done that. But then I saw someone else that commented a nice reframe saying that they feel more girly when they date women, like the girlness just multiplies when they're together. And I kind of love that. I love the idea that the girlness can just multiply and get to like this Mondo tsunami of just girl, woman. Yeah, let's go. I'm locked in on that. I'm loving that. I think there's some part of me that almost like fears being pushed into fulfilling a more like dominant or male adjacent role. But again, these are like heteronormative relationship dynamics that I am pushing on something that is like totally disconnected. But this is something that I've been thinking about. But I wonder if that's why. If like I know that I like to be a like softer, sweeter, very much in my femininity. I like being a softie and a sweetie and carrying that kind of presence and understanding the amount of like protection and comfort that can come from being someone like that. And also, historically, I have sought out relationships with people who have made me feel protected in a more like dominant way. In a different way that I provide to my partners. But I actually do think that I could feel just as protected if somebody is providing in the same way that I do. But I think maybe because of my experience as a plus size woman, I fear that I might be expected to be a more like dominant player. And I don't want to. I want to be a sweetie and a softie and sensitive and feminine and all of these things. And I'm also a lot of more harsh adjectives as well. But hopefully you get the vibe of what I'm saying. It is very confusing for me to even talk about. So I do understand if you are not 100% on my wavelength here. Somebody else said, I had a similar fear. I was always the motherly type, person you seek comfort in, etc. Women interested in me were usually into that archetype, and I truly felt too big in both senses for them, adding to my insecurities. Now my girlfriend is almost half my size, but some people, they just have a way of carrying themselves no matter their frame, and I've never felt unprotected by her. I fit perfectly in her arms when we lay down, never thought that I can be the one being held, and I love it so much. If that's something that's important to you, you will find it. It's not impossible, maybe even not uncommon. And yeah, I think that brings me back to what I said earlier about how I think a lot of this has to do with body insecurities, heteronormative relationship ideals that I have obviously been conditioned to view my relationships under, because that is how most of my relationships have been in the past. And also it is me never having to think about what protection actually looks like to me, because I just feel like it's been, I don't know, I've never had to think about the specifics, because I just feel like with my relationships with men, it was not a question. It just, it was something that was there. Not that it's a question of my relationship with women either. Again, I think a lot of this is just inside my head, and it's breaking down these like expectations, these relationship expectations that I am automatically putting on every relationship, instead of allowing myself to discover that actually queer relationships can be so much, you know, less rigid, and it can be a more equal exchange, even a more similar exchange of what that protection and comfort looks like. And that can be in itself a really like beautiful, powerful, alluring thing, which I think is what I am starting to feel in my body. The more I think about it and sort through it, the more I'm like, okay, wait, no, I think I'm picking up on the vibes of where my brain should be sitting with this. I just think that I was wrong. I think I had an incorrect perspective. Not that it comes from a bad place. Like, I think this is probably quite common. I wonder, eldest daughters, plus size bisexuals. I line up every eldest daughter plus size bisexual and ask them if they have this conflict inside their head too. And I bet you they fucking do. Like, it just feels like a perfect alignment of like all of the things that could boil up conflict or insecurity questions inside my brain have just lined up. But again, I just don't think they're coming from a place rooted in truth. I think it's coming from a bunch of other things that are, you know, just fueling a narrative that's not necessarily the truth. Anyways, I do think it's interesting to think about, like, what are the specific traits that I look for in a partner that make me feel protected and cared for? And maybe it actually feels easier to like recount specific moments and stories from my own life where I felt really protected and cared for by someone else. Like, for example, I was on the phone with someone that I was romantically interested in, and I wasn't really feeling well that day. My stomach was hurting. Something was just generally off about me. And after like 30 minutes of us being on the phone, I ended up hanging up on them, and I actually got sick. And I really do not do well with vomit. I don't do well with it at all. I don't even like saying the word out loud. When other people bring it up in conversation, I feel like my anxiety spikes. Thinking about it stresses me out. Even talking about it right now stresses me out. I feel like a really intense panic when I think about that happening. I'm not even going to say the word ever again in this podcast because it stresses me out that much. And I'm so sorry if it stresses you out also. But I was not feeling well. I was sick. And I hung up on them on the phone, and then I was having a panic attack because I was so scared of getting sick again. And so they called me back and they were like, what's going on? Are you okay? And I was like embarrassed to tell them because I'm like, this is so not sexy. But I was also having a panic attack. So it was sort of like, well, I'm too busy. My brain is too busy having a panic attack to be insecure about the fact that I'm sharing this information with a romantic interest. Okay. I'm just not even gonna think about it. But he was so genuinely helpful in like calming me down and sitting with me on the other line of the phone and being like, what do you have in your apartment? Like, what do you have this for, like, medicine wise? Do you have Gatorade? Do you have this, that, whatever? And just really truly made me feel so taken care of through the phone as I'm having a panic attack, talking me down from it, being like, here's what you're going to do. Here's what's going to be. You don't have to hang up on me. Like, I will sit here with you. And if you're not feeling well, you can just let me know. You can hang up. You can call me back, do whatever you need to do. But like, I'm not going anywhere. And we sat on the phone all night, 8 hours, and I didn't get sick again, thank God. But I felt like so truly comforted by them in that moment. Like, here I was laying in bed crying because I was so scared, and they just so showed up for me, and they made me feel like it was so normal for me to be upset about this. And they didn't make me feel like it was weird or unsexy or embarrassing that I shared it with them. They just like hopped into action for me through a fucking phone. Like, it wasn't even, yeah, I don't know. That was a moment that really stuck with me and is something that I have thought about multiple times in my life since that happened. Cause I was just like, they made me feel so cared for. And honestly, I think it's probably pretty rare in my life that I've even allowed someone else to see me in that way. It was a really vulnerable thing for me to share. I think that I am just, even when I'm open with people about like my fears or the things I'm upset about or angry about, I'm definitely the type of person that like I run it over in my head 100 times before I share it with other people. I very rarely let people see a like raw version of myself. I'm an open book. I'll share anything to the people in my life. I'm very open with my emotions, but I'm also someone that is like wants to come to conclusions before I talk, wants to talk to my therapist, wants to be, I don't know. I want to be well spoken. Cause I want to be understood, and I have like a fear of being misunderstood, and showing up as like your raw self, showing up like mid panic attack, showing up when I am like not in the best frame of mind. That's really vulnerable because there's so many ways that you can be misunderstood, or there's so many ways that someone could perceive you in a way that you're not intending. And I just think that I am in general someone that is, I like take care of myself. I figure it out. And this is the eldest daughter in me. It comes back to this, doesn't it? It's the eldest daughter in me. It's like growing up being the kid that your parents were always like, I'm not worried about you. Like even when I came to my parents, like stressed out, sobbing, really hung up about something, they would always like sit and listen. And then my dad specifically was always like, you'll be fine. I know you. I'm not worried about you. And sometimes there were times in my childhood where I was like, can you be worried about me though? Like, can you be worried? Like, I get it. I know I'll be fine. I'm like very self-sufficient. I will figure it out. I will take care of it. Yes. But like, can you worry? Can you be worried about me for a second? And yeah, I just think I've grown to be someone that is a problem solver for myself in that way. And I will share with people, but it'll be after I sort of get it together a little bit. It's rare that I really share this like completely raw, vulnerable, in many ways embarrassing and unsexy version of myself with people. But obviously this person was quite different to me. And their response just like affirmed to me tenfold why it was that I felt they were so special and so different. And they made me feel really supported and comforted and loved in that moment. Like really seen for who I am in a way that it like, it didn't feel threatening at all. I didn't feel that I like threatened my appeal by sharing this vulnerable moment with them the way that I might have thought that I would on paper, being like, oh, it's so embarrassing. But then it wasn't. And I felt like the closest that I've ever felt to them after that call. Point being that that is an example of like the type of partner that I want. That was a moment that illuminated to me like what it is that I am looking for, what it is, what I want to feel around another person. So anyways, I don't know if I have like an easy, clean, one-off word, sentence, to the point description of that, but that's a story. That's an example of something that made me feel protected and cared for and wrapped up in a way that I definitely seek out in partnerships. I still don't know how to describe that, but that, however you would describe that, that's an example of like one of the ways that I want to feel protected by someone. And honestly, I think that it's really been through this discussion that I've realized that feeling protected is important to me. I don't know that I realized that was important to me before. And through this, I feel like I've discovered that it is. So that's kind of cool. Because I don't know that I would have verbalized it like that if I was not exploring my queerness. Like if I was just going to push that side of myself into the corner and just only date men or only have crushes on men, only explore that, then I might not be sitting here being like, you know what, that is something that's important to me. Protection is a feeling. Feeling protected is something that is a high value of me in romantic partnership. Cool. Learn something new. Acquired a new fact about myself. That's so awesome. Anyways, great talk. Really always appreciate your guys' thoughtful comments. You bring up so much more reflection in me, and that's one of the many beautiful parts of this show. So thank you guys. And thank you for entertaining my like half-baked mid-discovery thoughts. And just letting me sit in that sort of in between, I don't know, here's what I'm thinking, here's all my messy thoughts sort of discovery place with you guys. I was transparently a little nervous to put out that section of the episode just because it's something that I'm still working through and thinking about in my own mind. So I just appreciate you guys responding with care and thoughtfulness, because it was very much appreciated. And yeah, it was just lovely. In internet drama, I have been deep in the Brianna Chicken Fry, Grace O'Malley friendship fallout. Obviously, I also kept up with the Brianna Chicken Fry, Zach Bryan being a piece of shit story. Really, I just keep up with everything. It's involuntary at this point. But this specific story of the Brianna Chicken Fry, Grace O'Malley friendship fallout has been so fascinating to me for a few reasons. I don't really want to recap their whole situation because honestly, it's too long of a story. And it also is not necessary for the parts that I am focused on. So I'll give you like a brief recap for people that have no idea what I'm talking about. But if you know a little bit or you want to just go watch different recap content, I encourage you to do that. But basically, high level overview. Brianna Chicken Fry is a TikToker. Grace O'Malley is her lifelong best friend and comedian. They start a podcast together that is hosted, owned by Barstool Sports. Boo! Brianna Chicken Fry is also on a podcast with, what's his face? Dave Portnoy. I love that my brain forgot his name for 5 seconds there. That was awesome. Dave Portnoy and Josh Richards, they do a show called BFFs, also on Barstool. But Brianna and Grace have been besties for literally life. And over the last year, they've had a little bit of a rockier friendship as portrayed on their show as well. But it recently came to a head following the breakup of Brianna and her boyfriend, ex-boyfriend, country superstar Zach Bryan, because he was an emotionally abusive piece of shit. And then she went on her little podcast tour talking about getting out of this toxic situation and everything that she learned and all of that, a situation where she was very clearly a victim and he was the worst person alive. And following all of this, they announced that their podcast was like officially over and ending. But it was more than that, because Brianna went on the BFFs podcast and basically talked shit about her lifelong best friend for an hour, and made some really unfair assessments about Grace as a person and like the fallout of their friendship, and what it had to do with her relationship. Anyways, it's like a whole thing. You can go watch so much other content that'll give you a good recap of it. What I was interested in and what has made me so like fascinated with this is number one, I'm just fascinated by like the politics of public friendship breakups. I think it is insane that we know all of this. I think it is insane that we have access to all of this information. I have always been so perplexed with content creators that will air out very personal, private details when it's not anonymous. Like, we know who you're talking about. We know the deal. We know everything. Like, there's very little that we don't know. I should not be able to recount all the details of someone's breakup, whether it be a friend breakup or a relationship breakup, knowing all the details of this other person when I don't know either of them. I think that's weird. I have always been like, I don't understand how people get away with it. I've always thought that watching Tana Mojo and like whenever she's gone through breakups or controversies with people, like she spares no details. And like that's why it's entertaining to watch. But I watch it and I'm like, how are you not destroying your life by outing all of these very personal details about people, may they be exes or ex-friends, that are not anonymous? Like, you're not keeping any of this under wraps. Not only are you talking about your feelings and every detail of what happened, but you're talking directly about who it is and are saying the name, and we know who you're talking about. My like general take on like talking about personal matters online is that I think you can talk about anything that goes on in your own life. I think there are specific situations that require a bit more tact and like delicateness about how you're approaching it. But in general, I think that you are allowed to talk about your own life and what has happened to you, what you're going through, what's, you know, the big hot topics in your own life. You're allowed to talk about those things. However, I do think that they should be kept anonymous. How I approach it with my own content, which understanding that how what I do is totally different than what they do. So my opinion here isn't even really necessary, but I'll explain to you my thought process just because I'm here and I am talking. So my thought process when like sharing personal information about mine on the internet, or like if I go through something, when I'm deciding what parts of it I share and what parts of it I keep to myself, usually I feel comfortable talking about my reflections on a certain situation, how something made me feel, what it brought up for me, and how I'm sort of reckoning with it or making sense with it within my own brain. What I won't talk about is like the specific details, any like exposing details that could bring someone else into it in a way that they didn't consent to. Or like any part of the story that I'm just like, there's no reason that someone that doesn't know me needs to know this. But when I'm talking about like reflections and things that are very central to me, that feels totally fine because I'm like, this is me. This is my life. This is my feelings. I'm allowed to talk about my feelings. However, I don't think that we should just be like exposing our personal lives without any regard for the other people that are involved in these stories. I think it's like you have to use your best judgment to decide what information is fine to share and can be a part of telling the story, because it's fine to talk about your own life and the things that are going on. But you need to have, you know, some discretion here in deciding what bits and pieces of information you're leaving in versus leaving out. And it has routinely impressed me how people who like commit their lives to telling a good story. And it's always the people that are like, they're in it for like the crazy stories. Like they want to get on their podcast every week and tell you the most fucking insane thing that they've ever done. And they're like searching for those like insane clickbaity titles, stories, moments for clips, all of that. It's always the people like that that are so willing to like just expose everything, every part of their lives. And it's always so perplexing to me because I'm like, how are you not like blowing your shit up? Like, are you not just ruining your life right now by exposing all of those details? Because it just feels like it's a bad look to say all of that about your very publicly known best friend and co-host. Like, I just feel like obviously they had to acknowledge that there was a friendship breakup of some kind because the podcast was ending. But I think you can acknowledge that without all of a sudden going on an hour long podcast rant with fucking Dave Portnoy and talking more about your best friend since childhood. That's crazy. That's literally diabolical to me that Brianna got on the podcast and was like, you know what I need to do today is vent and rant and talk shit about Grace, who is my best friend since childhood, and I feel really wronged by her, and I'm sad about this friendship ending. That's crazy. I think they should have put out a joint statement being like, the podcast had a great run, but we're both going our separate ways. You know, Grace is wanting to pursue comedy more. Brianna is wanting to do this, that, whatever. We've loved all the support for you guys. We'll always have love for each other, but ultimately we both need, you know, some time. Friendships ebb and flow, whatever. Just like a very cordial business statement. That's what I would have thought they should do, not whatever the hell is actually happening. And also, the podcast episode was like crazy. I listened to the whole thing, but it was crazy how it felt like the like feelings that Brianna had had toward Grace the whole time were all of a sudden coming up and out when she said, when she dropped in that line, when she was talking about her relationship with Zach and she made some like snarky comment about how Grace just didn't get it because she'd never been in a relationship before. I gasped, mama. I was like, what? Excuse me? Because it was said in a really fucking rude way. It was snarky the way she said it. And there is something about venting to Dave Portnoy, one of like the biggest douchebags in the world, not even the country, the world, venting to him about your best friend and like on a podcast live. I can't. It was so fucked up. I was like, this is crazy that we're able to listen to this. I don't understand why people do that. I've always been perplexed by it. Like seeing, like, especially during like the story time era of YouTube where people were just like ripping this shit open, okay? And exposing all of their like closest friends. People knew who they were talking about and they were making the most insane story time videos. I always wondered. I was like, how do you get away with this? How do you get away with posting this and not having everyone text you being like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Because it's like all of their comment sections are going to be flooded with this now. And like, for what? Because you needed to get your bag times three that month. The normal amount of views wasn't going to cut it. You needed to like really rake it in by exposing your best friend. And honestly, I love that the whole thing backfired and the whole internet is just like Team Grace. Because like, I can't help but be like, well, that's what you fucking get for doing that. Because that's crazy to do to a friend. So that's part one. Part two was just like how I am fascinated by the conversation topic that this brings up, because I think it's one that most of the time people don't want to touch because it is maybe not, it's maybe an uncomfortable topic, but like the question of like when your friend is going through something terrible and they are being a terrible friend to you because of it, how long are you expected to stand by them and like weather the storms of your friendship together until you have to walk away from that? And maybe they will look at you doing that as you abandoning them when they needed you the most. But like, at what point is that just the choice you have to make? And this has been like a topic I've seen brought up so many times in regards to like the Brianna and Grace stuff. And honestly, like I said, I don't even think you need to know the details of this story if you don't want to. If you're not like in the drama, in the juice like this, you don't even need to know. Like just high level, you know what's going on. All of these specific details, specific stories, there reaches a point where Grace can no longer in good conscience stand by and support her friend through this like terrible time and terrible relationship because of how terrible Brianna is being to her. And we can have empathy for the fact that Brianna is going through it and Brianna is in this toxic, horrible relationship. And we know that when people are in these like really toxic abusive relationships. They can be isolated from their friends and family. They can become like shells of themselves. You know, they become really unreliable. They can become really terrible friends. We know this. We can have empathy for the fact that Brianna is clearly going through it. And she is losing a lot of like her support system because of this relationship. And we can have empathy for that and also support Grace's choice to distance herself from this friendship and walk away, despite the fact that Brianna is probably always going to see this as Grace abandoning her when she needed her the most. I, however, do not see it that way. But I think that this is like an interesting topic of like how far, where is the line when it comes to like sticking by your friends when they are being a terrible friend to you, but there's like a reasonable explanation for why it's happening, where you're like, well, they're being the worst to me, but I know they're going through it. And we talked about this a few weeks ago, but like, I think often we want to give our friends the benefit of the doubt. And in those situations, we will stay as long as we possibly humanly can. But I think often people have the gut reaction to look down upon people who walk away from their friends that are really going through it in like toxic times. Because they think that, you know, it's the duty of a friend to be there for the other person when they're really going through it and sort of weather that storm together. And in some ways, I agree. Like, I do think that friendship is sometimes really hard, and sometimes you have to really step up for your friend, and there's going to be eras where you're putting in more effort than them, they're putting in more effort than you, you know, ebbs and flows, all of these things. We should always have empathy for our friends when they're going through it and there's a lot going on. However, that doesn't mean that there's all of a sudden no rules and no boundaries and you're not allowed to stick up for yourself if your friend is treating you like shit. If your friend is, you know, putting you through it because they're going through it. And again, we can have empathy for the fact that this happens and also say, I can't do this anymore. I need to look out for myself and my own mental health, and I can't be around this anymore. And I think that it's a touchy subject, or like a harder conversation, because I think people want to see it as very black and white. Like, the person who walks away from the friendship is like, I'm done. You're a bad person. I hate you. And it's just like the pointing of fingers. You're a bad person. No, you're a bad person. You're a bad person for abandoning me. You're a bad person for, you know, putting all of that on me and taking everything out on me. The pointing of fingers to be like, no, you're the bad person. No, you're the bad person in this situation is like quite unhelpful, I feel. And like, part of having a great, solid, healthy friendship with people is knowing when to set boundaries and be like, I can't do this anymore. That's part of it. I feel like the older I get, the more I'm like, I actually don't think I believe in unconditional anything. I think that things should have conditions. Love should be conditional. There should be boundaries. There should be rules. There should be parameters to what is an acceptable way to treat people and what isn't. And if it changes, like if we have a great, solid, healthy friendship for years and years and years, and then one day you switch up on me, I am not required to stay in this with you simply because we are friends who have committed to loving each other unconditionally. You know what I mean? Like, if you're the worst, I'm gonna react to that. The same way people say with like family members, they're like, oh, that's your parent. You have to love them unconditionally. That's your sibling. You have to love them unconditionally. And meanwhile, people are like, no, I actually don't. Because love has always had conditions. And if you treat me poorly, if you treat me in a way that makes me feel bad, if I feel terrible when I'm around you, I can't love you. Like, those are part of the conditions. Part of the conditions is that we have to be fucking kind to each other and work it out. And like, obviously shit happens and we're imperfect people and things are going to pop up and you have to navigate and weather those storms together. Absolutely. But there are boundaries. There are levels to this shit. Blanket statements don't really work in situations like this because it is so situation specific. Yes, you should be there for your friends when they're going through hard times. Yes, you should give them grace when they don't show up like 100% in the way that they should. You should give them grace, and you should also call them out if it's bothering you. Do not let resentment build up. And also know that if it becomes too much for you, you are allowed to set your own boundaries. Just because they are struggling doesn't mean you have to accept all of their behaviors. Just because someone else is going through it doesn't mean they get a free pass to treat you like shit and make your life miserable. And I know that that sucks, and some people are not going to like that, but it's the truth. Just because you are going through it, just because terrible things are happening in your own life, doesn't give you a free pass to treat your friends like shit to the point where they're not allowed to leave you or they're a bad person for leaving you. You can feel however you want to feel about it. And also, again, we could have empathy for why you've been unable to show up as a great friend in this situation. But honestly, I think some people forget that you are not the main character in everyone else's life. Because you are going through it doesn't mean that everyone else needs to put their own feelings and emotions and lives on pause to show up for you to the point where they're letting you walk all over them and treat them like shit and talk to them like they're, you know, subhuman. There is a line somewhere, right? I can't tell you where it is because it's going to be different for everyone. But yes, there's a certain amount of grace and understanding and patience we should be giving our friends, but there is a line where that ends. There is a line for everyone, right? Where it would become dire for you, where if you stayed in this situation, your mental health would start to deteriorate. You would then start to be miserable. And the other person might always look at you like you abandoned them. And that's fine. That is okay. We're all going to tell ourselves our own stories to, you know, get through whatever it is we need to get through. And if in their story, you need to be a villain and you need to be this nasty, horrible person who abandoned them, and that's the role you need to fill, fine. Fine. However, I would push people to think of things a little bit more, you know, in the gray area where there's not a bad guy. There's no bad person, right? Though I think it is extremely shitty to get on a podcast and talk so brazenly about your best friend of many years. If we ignore that part of it, because I think that is a total asshole move, 100%, no way around it. But ignoring that part of it, like, Grace isn't a bad person for walking away from this friendship and not being there for Brianna when she needed her. The same way Brianna is not a shitty person for feeling hurt that her friend wasn't there for her. Both of these things can exist at the same time. Brianna needed one thing, Grace needed another thing. Ultimately, it's going to shake out the way it's going to shake out. And that is what it is. Anyways, all of that to say, I've just thought this was crazy that we've been able to bear witness to all of this. And it is like an interesting subject, like public friendship fallouts and like the ethics of them, how you should handle a public friendship fallout. I think this is like a masterclass on what not to do, to be honest. And also the question of like, where is the line where you're allowed to say, actually, no, I will not be there for you anymore. Even when, like, on paper, you hope that your friends are able to be there for you in those tough moments, but your friends are not required to put up with your own shitty behavior towards them. Your friends are not required to endure mistreatment by you because you're going through it. That's not okay. Your friends are allowed to have boundaries. Love is allowed to be conditional. And really, I do believe that that is the kinder thing. I think that there should be boundaries. And like, I love the idea of unconditional love. And I'm sure in the past I've said that I loved people unconditionally. But really, I don't know if that's true. I don't think that anybody loves unconditionally. I think we all have conditions, and that's good. That is a good thing. I think if I said I loved someone unconditionally, what I meant to say was really that I trusted them to behave a certain way to the point where I can feel that I love them unconditionally because I know they would never act like that. That's what I meant. I know that friend will never fucking act like this. So I love them unconditionally because we'll never have an issue. That's what I mean. But if we did have an issue, if they did start acting bananas, okay, there would be conditions. But there are people in my life that I'm just not worried about that. Or like someone like my sister, where it's like, that's my fucking blood. My sister is allowed to act more bananas than other people are and get away with it. Siblings in general, you know, like my sister, which she doesn't do this, which this is also part of it, but my sister could open up my front door and be like, you big fucking cunt, you big bitch, 2024, I fucking hate you. And I'd be like, all right. We could go at it with each other. And then 30 minutes later, we'd be completely fine. No, obviously this is all made up because that's not how my sister and I treat each other. But that is like, I don't know, maybe an example of how I envisioned unconditional love before, because it's like, I don't know. We don't do that. But if we did do that, I would still forgive her for it. But there is still conditions. Like if my sister walked through my front door with a gun and shot me in the arm because she was mad at me, yeah, you know, I don't think I would talk to her anymore. You know what I mean? Like, maybe the line is different from person to person. Like, my sister is my sister, so she can get away with a lot more. Granted, these are not issues that are happening, right? I never have to worry about us reaching that line. So when I think about my sister, I'm like, yeah, that is unconditional love. I do unconditionally love my sister. But also, that's not true. Like, there is conditions. We would just never reach the line of conditions. So it feels unconditional. So that is how I see it inside my head. Something might feel unconditional because you have such a healthy relationship that you never have to consider this like line that exists somewhere out there where the conditions would then come into play. I feel the same way about Ashley. Like there is no reason to consider that. So it may feel unconditional, but really there is always conditions. You guys just might have such a lovely relationship that they're not even, you know, in your sight line. But there's always conditions. And there should be, because that's how relationships stay healthy. That's how you have wonderful, beautiful connections with people where you're both like satisfied and happy and you both feel supported and loved. And there are ways to go through hard times with people without putting strain on your friendship. That's another part of it. Because I think sometimes people hear stuff like this and they're like, oh, well, I'm going through a hard time and I would feel like so shattered if my friends abandoned me because I was upset or I was having a hard time. Which, number one, I think that's just like the incorrect framing of it. Your friends aren't leaving you because you're having a hard time. Your friends are leaving you because you're treating them like shit, you know? So that's number one. But it's like, you don't have to get to that point. If you're struggling and you're going through it, you don't have to treat your friends poorly. You can be a good friend while also going through it. Many people have done it before and they will continue doing it in the future. Like, you can go through it without being shitty to other people. And also, I feel like a lot of the time, as long as you are open to the idea that you could have made a mistake, that you could have been wrong, that you are okay with apologizing, you'll be good. Like, it's really, that's what it comes down to in most situations. As long as you are open to the idea that you could be in the wrong, are open to hearing your friend come to you when you've upset them, are open to apologizing and genuinely reconsidering your actions, I think you'll be fine. I don't think you have anything to worry about. I think the real problem is when people are just horrible, nasty to their friends. And then when they're confronted about it, they're like, how dare you confront me? I'm so sad. I'm going through it. How dare you also be upset? How dare you abandon me without ever turning it around and looking at themselves? That's where the problem is. You know? I don't know. Anyways, love is conditional. And that's awesome. I think it sounds more romantic to be like, love is unconditional. But I think that we need to start thinking about this differently because conditions are fucking awesome. Conditions are how we show people that we love them. Setting boundaries is awesome. Like, it's great. It makes your relationships better. And also, there are many times where you can set boundaries, walk away from a friendship, and then there can be time for you guys again where you can come back together in the future and reunite. And that's also awesome, you know? But it also depends on how you handle it. Like, if you and your friend go through a friendship fallout and then you get on a podcast with Dave Portnoy and air all your shit out, like, and there might not be another time for you guys. You know, like, there are lines, there are boundaries, there are things that once they're said, once they're done, they cannot be taken back. I don't know what their vibe is, but if it was me, that might be it. We might be done if that was the route we're taking. You never know. And sometimes space is a good thing, and endings are necessary, boundaries are necessary. And ultimately, I think it is a good thing, a net positive. May you not know it in the moment, but I think that all of these things, it's like you either set boundaries and the friendship becomes healthier in the future, it paves the way for the friendship to become better later on, or nothing changes, the friendship ends, you both go your separate ways and find people better suited for you. That's also good long term, you know? It just feels like there's no negative to setting a boundary. It either enhances the relationship or it issues in the end. In which case, that's what needed to happen. Sad, but necessary. I just sounded like Vanessa Ann Hudgens. God, wasn't that horrible? She went on like Instagram Live a week into the pandemic and was like, sad, but inevitable, or whatever she said. That was crazy. I just accidentally quoted her. Anyways, totally fucking off topic. Interesting though. Interested to hear your guys' thoughts on like the ethics of public friendship breakups when both parties are public figures and everybody knows the details of what's going on. If you've kept up with the Brianna Grace O'Malley fallout, would love to hear your thoughts. And ultimately, I'm sending all the peace and love to Grace, who has mostly stayed silent throughout this whole thing. And I think that she should. I can't believe we're getting so close to episode 100 of the show. It's like cuckoo bonks bananas crazy to me. And I'm excited to hit 100 episodes in January, because next week, episode 99 is going to be the last episode of the year. And then there's going to be a 2-week break. And then we're going to hit the ground running. We'll be back halfway through January with episode 100. And next week, obviously, to close out the year, we're going to do the Lover Girls Awards. Yeah! Anyways, I hope you guys have a fabulous weekend. I hope you have a wonderful Christmas. Oh my God, because I won't see you between now and Christmas. So have a wonderful holidays with all of your people. And I'll see you next week's episode for the Lover Girls Awards. Woo!
Okay, it's your turn. Truth or dare?
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.